You may remember earlier this year, a lot of noise was made in the sports world when some players on the Northwestern University football team tried to unionize. That question is yet to be answered. There are going to be court cases about it for a long time to come, including a hearing later on this year at the National Labor Relations Board. But the question really came down to a matter of whether the fact that you get a, quote, college education, unquote, and I am purposely putting that in air quotes, is enough compensation for the 50 to 60 hours a week that these players have to put in to make money for their schools and for the NCAA. It always comes right down to money. Well, now we've got a suit that is not about college players, but about guys who've gotten out of college. And it's not about football players, it's about baseball players. Guys who've gotten drafted or picked up by Major League Baseball teams and relegated to their minor league franchises until they're ready to move up to the show. There's a lawsuit about them as well that I think is all about money. Let's ask one of the lawyers who's involved in that, who knows a little bit about life in the minors because he spent 4 years playing minor league ball as a professional baseball player, but never did make it up to the show. But he's finally made it to this show. Garrett Broshaus is an attorney here in St. Louis at Corine Tillery. Welcome to the Big 550, Garrett.
Thanks, Paul. Pleasure to be here.
You played for 4 years, and where were you?
So I was in the San Francisco Giants organization. Basically, I went wherever they told me to go. So they had a team up in Salem, Oregon that I started at. And I spent some time in San Jose, California, one of their teams. I spent quite a bit of time in Connecticut for their AA team. And I spent a little bit of time in Fresno for their AAA team.
Was this mostly like short stops? You do this for one season and the other one for another season? Or were you getting moved in the middle of a season?
Well, both. There were seasons where I stayed at one place the entire year. And then there were other seasons where I moved a couple of times. And so I remember my first season when the first time that I was moved from one team to another. I'd been in Salem, Oregon for just over 3 weeks, and I was doing really well. I was just out of college and pitching really, really well. And I had my first bad outing, and the manager comes out to take me out of the game, and I'm about to hand the ball to him, and he says, "Well, I got good news and bad news." And here I am, I'm struggling that day, and so I'm not in the mood for any jokes at all. And I think he's making, I think there's a car insurance commercial at the time that has a similar line in it. And so I'm not in the mood for any jokes at all. And he says, "Well, bad news is I'm taking you out of this game. But the good news is you're getting promoted. Just pack your stuff. You got to be at the airport in 2 hours.
Wow.
And so that's how it goes. You basically live out of a suitcase. You have basically two suitcases worth of stuff that you just take with you during the season, and that's what you live out of.
Were you drafted by the Giants right out of Mizzou?
Yes, I was. I was one of the lucky ones that was drafted in one of the higher rounds. I was in the fifth round of the draft. At that time, there were 50 rounds in the draft. There are currently 40 rounds in the draft. And so, all these teams have these extensive minor league systems that are needed to develop all the players that they have. 40% of the minor leagues are Latino guys, and some of them sign as young as 16 years of age. And then, of course, in America, they sign high school kids, too. So they have to have this vast developmental system to develop all of these kids.
But in your lawsuit, it's really, as I said, about these guys exploited. Is that what this class action suit is about? Exploitation by Major League Baseball?
Exploitation is a strong term, but I think in this case it's a fair term. What has happened here, it's really this recipe for them to take advantage of these guys. On the one hand, you have these owners that have all the power in the baseball world, and they have this antitrust exemption as well. So they can work together to suppress wages and collude around the working conditions as much as they want to, and they're exempt from the antitrust laws. And then on the other side, you have this group of workers that a lot of times are young and a lot of times are uneducated, and they're so desperate to get into this industry that they'll accept any offer that they get a lot of times.
Because they hear about the guys in the big leagues making millions of dollars a year, and they have dollar signs in their eyes. Plus, you know, they like to play baseball for a living, which ain't a bad thing.
Well, sure, yeah, who wouldn't? You know, I've looked back on my time, and yeah, I was I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity. Still watch baseball routinely. I went to the baseball game last night. But at the same time, I recognize that there was some unfairness that was going on here. And one of the things that drives this unfairness, you know, I was talking about that recipe for that allows them to take advantage of these guys, is the minor league guys don't have a union either. So again, you have those owners that have all this power on one hand, and then the minor league guys aren't part of the major league union. They don't have a union of their own, so there's nothing to counteract that power on the other side.
How long did it take you in the minors to start getting jaded about this?
Very early on, I realized that things weren't quite right. You mentioned the efforts by the college athletes to unionize. And what was incredible to me and somewhat shocking was when I first got into minor league baseball, I felt like I had taken a step down from being at the University of Missouri, both in the types of instruction I was getting and the working conditions and the living conditions. And to illustrate that, the per diem that's given to minor league players is quite a bit lower than the per diem given to college players.
Wow. How much would you be given?
At that time, it was like 20 bucks just when you're on the road is all you're getting.
Now, that's a per diem for expenses, but the club covers your room and board and transportation, right?
Well, it covers transportation, you know, you're traveling by the bus and stuff, and doesn't really, you know, and you get, obviously, you know, you're staying in hotels when you're on the road, too. But the food issue is an interesting issue, because in some ways you're given food at the clubhouse, but you're also paying for it. You pay clubhouse dues to a clubhouse manager, and there's a set amount per day that you pay, and it varies depending on which level you're at. But the food is just so shockingly low quality that it's very tough to eat in a nutritious manner at all. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you're just eating tons and tons of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day before games. And so here you are. They expect you to eat in a nutritious manner. They give you these packets telling you all these nutrition facts and stuff. And a lot of guys take that seriously. You know, the modern athlete takes nutrition very seriously. They realize that what goes in their body is going to affect their performance, and so they want to eat in a healthy manner, but it's very, very difficult for them to do so on the salaries and on what's provided.
How much was the salary?
At the lowest levels, at the time I started playing, it was $850 per month. It's gone up very slightly to $1,100 per month. Most of the other levels haven't risen at all since I started playing back in 2004.
When you say the lowest levels, is that rookie ball?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So we have rookie ball, Class A, Double A, and Triple A. Those are the levels of the minors. So we're talking about $1,100 a month at Triple A?
So Triple A, well, here's what it, in the first year, technically, no matter which level you're playing at, you're always making $1,100 per month. Now, most of those guys are in rookie level in their first year.
Yep.
And then after your first year, depending on which level you're at, it goes up incrementally a little bit, but not substantial. So, you know, if you're in Double A, there are a lot of guys in Double A, if it's their first year, they might be making $7,500 for the entire year.
$7,500 for the year, which is really, what, 6 months long?
Yeah. So it's, well, yes and no. So the season is around 6 months, but then the contracts require you to do all kinds of stuff in the off season too. And so this really is a year-round job. Are you working 60 hours a week in the off season? No, you aren't working 60 hours a week in the off season. But you're doing a substantial amount of training activities that are directly related to your job that you're required to do in the off season, and it really hinders your ability to get any other type of meaningful work during the off season. And then, of course, you have some guys go into instructional leagues, which is a month long or so during the off season, where, you know, they're spending 50 hours a week at the spring training site. And then you have spring training also, where you're spending 50 hours a week working during spring training. And you don't earn your salary during spring training, which is very, very tough on guys, because a lot of times they still have their rent back home to pay during the spring training season. Some of these guys still have student loan bills that are paying, car loans and things like that. And now all of a sudden they aren't earning a paycheck at all. And it's really tough for those guys.
I keep thinking about that 1,100 number that you're getting in your first year, which is you're probably going to be in rookie ball. That's literally the minimum wage in this country.
Oh, it's less than the minimum wage. The guys are working 60 hours a week a lot of times.
Right. It's more hours than you would put in if you had just some retail job somewhere. And 60 hours a week is a tough work week for anybody. So how does baseball get away with it?
That's a good question. That's why we brought this lawsuit. We don't think that it's legal. We think that their current pay structure is failing to pay minimum wage during the season. We think that they should be paying overtime for those wages, for those hours above 40 hours, and we think they should be paying salaries during spring training and for that required off-season training.
Yes.
So that's why we brought this.
So the lawsuit is about changing the wage structure.
Yeah, it's about changing the wage structure, and to be clear, It's seeking to apply the same laws that McDonald's has to comply with, the same laws that Walmart has to comply with. You know, this, you aren't talking about huge sums of money for each guy here. We realize that this is the minor leagues, and minor leaguers should be compensated differently than major leaguers. Nobody's talking about a minor leaguer making 500 grand a year here. We realize that the minor leagues are a proving ground. But what we are talking about is we're talking about just a basic minimum wage here, with basic overtime wages whenever you do work 60 hours a week, so that guys can pay those student loan bills, they can pay those rent bills. And a lot of guys are cramming. I had a guy just text me last night, for instance, and he's currently playing, and he got moved up, and he's the fifth person in a two-bedroom apartment right now.
Wow.
So they will do these things. They'll cram guys into apartments, a lot of times sleeping on air mattresses, because they want to stretch the rent out so much that their rent payments are smaller. And
yeah.
So the way they do that is they put more guys in the apartment.
As, by the way, many minimum wage workers also have to do to get by on a month-to-month basis. By the way, are minor league baseball players allowed to have a second job?
They're allowed to during the off season. And a lot of them do get second jobs.
Because, but that off season, if you got to go to spring training for 2 months and you got to play ball for 6 months, your off season's 4 months.
Right. So who's going to hire you for four months? It's very tough to find meaningful employment for that short time period. And also, because you do have those training obligations, those work obligations related to your baseball contract during the off season, you only have so many hours to do it as well. You know, you can't go out and get a full time job. So a lot of guys they'll do anything from selling women's shoes at Macy's during the holiday season to giving pitching and hitting lessons to substitute teaching. I knew a guy that delivered Jimmy John's one off season. They'll do a little bit of anything.
Not going to make a lot of money in any of those jobs, and it's really just a way to get through a few months and hopefully make the rent until you can go back and get to spring training. When you were drafted out of Mizzou, and I know you said that there are a lot of players who come into the league who aren't coming out of college, sometimes just right out of high school, but did you get a signing bonus?
I did. As I mentioned before, you know, I was one of the lucky ones that was drafted in the higher rounds of the draft.
Yeah.
And so in those higher rounds, you know, guys are getting decent signing bonuses that help them live throughout their playing career. But there are 40 rounds in the draft. There used to be 50 rounds in the draft. And after the 10th round, those signing bonuses plummet to where a lot of guys are signing for $1,000, $2,500. And so it's basically a useless amount of money whenever you try to stretch it out over any time period at all.
Even if you got $100,000, if you're in the minors for 4 years, that amortizes to $25,000 a year. Again, we're not talking about getting rich.
Oh, sure. No, nobody's talking about the minor leaguers getting rich at all. In fact, here's one interesting thing about it. They took steps in the last collective bargaining agreement. Even though the minor leaguers had no seat at the table, they took steps in the last collective bargaining agreement to reduce the signing bonuses. And teams saved a lot of money by doing that. So those top picks are still getting large sums of money, but not as much as they used to. And they could have reinvested that money into the minor league salaries, and it would have gone a long way towards solving this problem. But instead, they didn't touch minor league salaries at all. and they remain completely stagnant, and that's why we still have a problem today.
When you got into rookie ball, which was what, 8 years ago?
06? Now that you put it that way, it was actually 2004.
Okay, so 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Gosh, I'm getting old.
Well, of those guys who were on that team with you in rookie ball, how many made it to the show?
A newspaper article just talked about that the other day, as I hadn't really thought about it recently. And there was really only one guy that had a meaningful career in the major leagues, a guy named Jonathan Sanchez. And I'm not even sure which team he's playing for right now, or if he's still in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But he had several a good length of time, probably a stretch of around 4 or 5 years in the major leagues. So,
okay, this lawsuit that you have filed, or that you and your law firm are party to, against Major League Baseball, originally started with just three guys, right?
Correct.
The Kansas City Royals, the Florida Marlins, and San Francisco Giants were the teams that were named. Since you started this and you've gotten publicity about this, have you got a lot of other minor leaguers who wanted to come on board and a lot of other major league franchises that are being named as defendants in this case?
There was a tremendous outpouring of support from guys. You know, guys immediately recognized that this is a step that was needed. This is something that's talked about in the clubhouses a lot of times. A lot of times in the corners of the clubhouses, though, where people don't hear you.
Right.
So we now have 32 plaintiffs. 32 guys have jumped on board. And all 30 teams are defendants now, along with Major League Baseball and Commissioner Bud Selig.
And what happens, and what's your timeline now?
We will have a court appearance on Friday, actually, where we will find out the timeline for the rest of the case. Since there are so many plaintiffs and are so many defendants, there are going to be a lot of depositions in this case. What a deposition is it's basically a formal interview where the attorneys sit down, sort of like what you see on TV. They sit down and you're under oath, the witness is under oath, and the attorney, peppers the witness with questions to see what the witness knows.
I just want to go back to your minor league career for just a moment here, Garrett. We mentioned four seasons in the minors with various different teams. Was it in that fourth season that you said, you know what, if I don't get to the big leagues this year, I'm quitting? Or at the end of that fourth season, did they say, you know what, we're not going to be bringing you up and you're done?
So in my last spring training, I think it was actually my fifth year, to be clear, in my last spring training, they sat me down on the very last day of spring training. I thought I was going to be a starting pitcher in AAA, and I was still on the AAA squad at the end of spring. And I round the corner that morning, and they waved me into the office.
Which you know right there is not good. They don't wave you into the office to say good things to you.
No. Yeah, you're either on the team or you're pulled in the office, and something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm pulled in the office, and, yeah, your heart just sinks. It really does. It's like you're just punched in the stomach. And they sit me down. There's the assistant general manager's in there. The farm director's in there. The minor league pitching coordinator is in there. And they said, you know what? We appreciate everything that you've done. You've always been a hardworking guy. You're a good example for others. We don't see you in the future of this organization, though.
And that's when you said, well, I'm going to go to law school and get my degree and sue your butt.
It was one of those things. Like I said, it was like I was punched in the stomach, and they gave me the chance to stick around that year if I wanted to. And my wife was about to have hip surgery, and she was on our health insurance plan, and so of course I needed to keep working and have that the health insurance benefits. So I stuck around for that season, and while I was on the bus rides, I started studying for the LSAT, and then 3 days after the season ended, I took the LSAT, which is the entrance exam for law school.
Yep, and you got your law degree from SLU, right?
Correct, yeah.
Could these players in the minors unionize? Could there be a Minor League Baseball Players Association?
Well, they certainly could. They're protected under the law. You know, one of the things with the college players, the debate they're having right now, what's going to be decided before the National Labor Relations Board, is whether the college players are even protected by the National Labor Relations Act. In essence, whether they even have the right to unionize without being retaliated against.
Yep.
The minor league guys certainly have that right. And that's been settled years and years and years ago.
For Why that. Haven't they?
That's a great question. It's something that I have, as you can imagine, I've given a lot of thought to. Minor league hockey has a union, so they have unionized. And minor league hockey players actually make quite a bit more money than the minor league baseball players do. Minor league umpires have unionized. In fact, they just did back in 1999, so fairly recently.
Hmm.
And the minor league umpires make more money than the minor league players do, and their per diem is almost twice as much. So there's certainly a precedent there and a protocol that's been established for doing so. But there are challenges. You know, guys are so reluctant to upset the status quo because they're chasing this dream. You know, they don't want to do anything that they feel might jeopardize their chance of making it up to the major
league. Don't want to make the massa mad.
Oh, no, exactly. We would never want to do that.
Yeah, particularly when the massa has that million-dollar contract and the chance to be famous and get on TV and be interviewed by ESPN. So
certainly,
all of those things are out there big time. We're talking about a $9 billion industry. And at the other end, we're talking about guys who are paid $1,100, $1,200, $1,500, maybe $2,000 a month. And it is exploitation. That is the word that has to be applied to this. And I look forward to seeing how this goes forward. And I hope you can convince other players in the minors to be a part of it and maybe shake things up in the sports world a little bit, Garrett.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time, and yeah, I appreciate you talking about the story.
Thanks so much for joining me here today. Garrett Broshaus, who is an attorney at Corine Tillery right here in St. Louis and a former minor league baseball player himself. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.